not stop. We did not even pay any attention to the warning. Consider now the following information extracted from Science News, Volume 129, Number 9, 1986, 11 years after the warning. Quote, ozone, the atmospheric chemical that shields Earth life from harmful ultraviolet radiation, has had a volatile political and scientific history, not to mention a cover-up. Battles have been waged over the extent to which chlorofluorocarbons, I said chlorofluorohydrogens before, I meant chlorofluorocarbons, CFCs, and other chemicals injected into the atmosphere, primarily by human endeavors, attack the cosmic layer. Science News, September, it looks like September 14th, but it's 9/14/B5, page 165. Predictions of the resultant ozone depletion occurring globally in the next century have ranged from 3 to 18%, as scientists work to unravel the mind-boggling complexity of atmospheric chemistry. As researchers have pored over the data in search of very subtle annual changes in global ozone chemistry, they have failed to notice the South Pole's ozone concentration during October has dropped much more drastically by 40% since the mid-1970s. Scientists now know that the ozone hole looms over the entire continent of Antarctica every October and has been getting more severe every year. This effect was totally unexpected, says atmospheric scientist Richard Stolarski of the NASA Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland. The big question now, he stresses, is whether the effect is a forewarning of a significant change in global ozone or simply an isolated scientific curiosity. Well, why doesn't he call Al Gore and then he can get all the answers? The chemistry of the ozone layer worldwide is also plagued by uncertainties. But as the recent NASA report concludes, researchers now have compelling observational evidence that trace gases other than, should be CFCs, chlorofluorocarbons, and it's CGCs, such as methane, nitrous oxide, and carbon monoxide, are increasing on a global scale. Science News, May 18, 1985, page 308. And scientists now realize that the trace gases affecting ozone chemistry are the same as those that contribute to or alter the greenhouse warming of the planet. The two problems are intimately coupled. A report to which 150 scientists from 11 nations contributed concludes, given that we know about the ozone and trace gas climate problems, we should recognize that we are conducting one giant experiment on a global scale by increasing the concentrations of trace gases in the atmosphere without knowing the environmental consequences. Card. That report was accompanied by a sequence of 6-color maps made by the Total Ozone Mapping, should be spectrometer, and the reader is reading it spectrometer. I don't think it's meter, I think it's meter. Spectrometer, TOMS, Total Ozone Mapping Spectrometer, on the Polar Orbiting Nimbus 7 satellite launched by NASA in 1978, 3 years after the Pleiadian warning. They clearly show a 6-fold increase in the size of the ozone hole at the South Pole from 1979 through 1984. If this is not cause for alarm, nothing is. Well, we have scientists working at the South Pole. They're watching Nibiru come in, and those guys are in danger of getting cancer. But I guess they don't care if they die because they're holding secrets, and they don't want those secrets out. So they leave them down there until they get full of radiation and poisoned, and then when they die with their secrets. Back to the script. But that is not all the harm being done. If we need confirmation, we need only turn to an article, The Dark Side of the Sun, on page 60 of Newsweek for June 9, 1986, where they show that melanoma, skin cancer, has increased tenfold since 1930, early in the industrialization of this planet. Since 1930, the lifetime incident of this form of skin cancer has gone from 1 in 1,500 people to 1 in every 150 people. The tenfold increase, and mostly in the last 10 years. Stop Press. Before returning to our original ET texts, we suddenly find it necessary to suspend progress and continue with the subject of ozone depletion, because only 2 months after the Newsweek article, the subject has become of even greater importance. Sixth contact on the 18th of June 1975 took place at the very hour, early hour, of 4 a.m., 4:11 a.m., where an interesting bit of information was developed. So Nancy opened the conversation this time. She says, "Regretfully, a longer conversation is not possible for me now because I am obligated for a special task. Thus, in the coming time, I will not be able to come in contact with you as often. Please understand that we have to space out contacts more in time." Meyer asks, "Are you still going away?" Sannyasi says, "As I have been ordered, but I'm not leaving your solar system." Meyer asks, "What about this moment with the demonstration?" Sannyasi says, "This does not deal with me." I think that should be my. "This does not deal with my longer trip, before which I want to exercise the demonstration." Meyer says, "I see. I thought we were finally at this point." Sannyasi says, "The time for that does not press, as I still have a lot to do before this. My new task is taking me only to some planets of your system and to your satellite, the moon. I want to go to these places. This is in connection with something that has happened since our last meeting." What happened? Which planets is she going to? What is she going to do there? How does she breathe in those atmospheres? Does she wear some sort of a spacesuit? Okay, then the editor makes a note. "Since this material was received by us and translated for publication here, we have become involved in the investigation and publication of a very profound and extensive UFO case involving some extraterrestrial beings who seem to have an operating base on our moon that is set up about every 2 years and is manned and is used actively for something like 6 months, and then they leave and are gone for around 18 months before they come back again. This timing would fit a retrogressed cycle of the events we have been able to observe up to now. See UFO Abduction at Mirasol by Dr. Walter K. Bueller, this publisher." In a discussion about a space project, Meyer inquired if the Pleiadians had ever interfered in such projects and received a startling reply. Sannyasi said, "Surely, but not we alone. We have followed the whole development and also influenced it in certain measures." I think that should be. "On the other hand, we have had to trouble ourselves for the eliminations in different cases or to help projects fail." Meyer says, "That sounds like you have sometimes interfered in matters." Sannyasi says, "Surely, if you want to consider it so." Meyer says, "I want to tell it that way. There is something not fully evident for me, because you just made a strange comment that you are not the only ones who are keeping their eyes and ears open in these concerns and have interfered. Are you concealing something from me? And this not only now, for some time I have noticed you're having a secret ahead of me, where it always seemed like you were waiting for my question." Sannyasi asks, "Can't you imagine what it is?" Meyer says, "I'm having my assumptions here." Sannyasi says, "Then tell it." Meyer says, "I'm not stupid, as later it will sound from the other side like I made a fool of myself." And Sannyasi said, "Your sudden fear is unknown for you. It does not fit." Meyer says, "All right, you got me. You know very well fear is no stranger to me, and that you are taking unfair advantage." And Sannyasi says, "Surely, but I had to be unfair." Meyer says, "Well, it deals with the following. Already for some time I have assumed that besides yourselves are still other extraterrestrials hunting along in our world, but having different wishes and hopes, each according to his own. These creatures could be strange to your race, at least some of them, while others might rise from your race itself. Sannyasi says, yes, surely, but speak on. Meyer says, I can imagine that not all of the extraterrestrials who interfere in such concerns here on Earth have the best intentions for us, but where it is not evident as to why you allow them to continue, I think. It's a strange sentence. I don't know really what they were saying. Sannyasi says, because each form of life is justified in its own existence and thinks and acts according to its own character and form, we are not allowed to interfere if not necessary for survival. Thus we are only allowed to be active in a way of teaching. But go on speaking. Meyer says, that explains your behavior, and I see it as logical. So I start from the assumption that certain strange to you forms of life from the widths of the universe are hunting along on our Earth and in cosmic space and possibly trying to influence other forms of life in different ways. On the other hand, I also assume that there are one or several groups of descendants of your ancient race who have not yet returned to you and in consequence still live according to the ancient forms and still influence many forms of life, as well as the Earth humans according to that factum. Never heard of that word before, factum. And appear as messengers of a M.E. I don't know what that means. It is evident to me that concerning this, you have not told me the whole truth, as we have talked about these things several times before this. Boy, this is really bold. He's going to create a problem with her. Sannyasi says, I have never told you anything but the truth. Meyer says, then let me explain it another way. About this whole matter that you have told me, only half the truth, and only half explained that. Sannyasi says, your explanation is true. Meyer says, very kind of you, but why haven't you told me all? Sannyasi says, the time has not been mature for that. In your assumption, you are right, because there are other creatures in Earth space than ours alone. There are as well some splinter groups of our own ancient race who came here as well as visiting other worlds, and they still live according to older ways. They try to influence life forms, especially Earth humans, according to their manner. As their ancestors appeared like gods, so also do some of these. Concerning the above, Meyer further explained, for our benefit, that there is an important doctrine for peace and survival within the creation. No single creature is given primitive dominance or paramount authority over any other, though Earthman chooses to elect himself to this position, and they all exist equally within the vast creation. Whenever anyone arrogates superiority to himself and sets out to carry a stick or sets himself up as an authority, he must be aware that there is always another with a bigger stick. Each creature within the creation goes its own way in evolution and is allowed free rein unless and until it becomes dangerous and a menace to any other. One does not interfere with another without just cause. Thus, many different UFO entities may come and go without specific interference, as long as they observe the natural law of the creation. Meyer explained that there are always backsliders and imperfections in every evolution that get stuck at certain levels for a time and are then passed up by the more progressive. But they too will, in time, catch up again. However, we do also have some human races evolved beyond us, but behind the Pleiadians, and some of them are Pleiadian laggards, here, observing, and some even attempting to impose their will on Earth humans. These are allowed their freedom to evolve, like all others, so long as they do not become a direct danger to life and being. Such, according to the Pleiadians, are the IHWH descendants, still coming here from their present refuge planets. On Wednesday, the 25th of June, 1975, at 2:37 in the afternoon, the 27th contact took place. Meyer was chastised for being late. Sannyasi says, "Today you are not in a hurry. I had to call you several times." Meyer was getting a little tired of the constant demands on his time, energy, and resources, and was beginning to feel like he had seen enough of the extraterrestrial woman and the spacecraft. He was being criticized by his friends for not producing more and for not getting them into contracts, too, or at least where they could see more. And he was being criticized by the extraterrestrials for not meeting their objectives more rapidly and for failing to turn his friends into a more active support group. The newness of these exotic contacts had worn off, and he was really in no hurry to rush off to another call, always long distances away, over difficult and trying routes, and usually in bad weather or very late at night, and sometimes both. Though this one was coming in mid-afternoon. He was babysitting the children at the time, and when his wife returned, he did not respond, taking his camera and riding off on his moped, and he finally arrived at the site of the contact, not really expecting them to be there after so long a time, and not particularly caring whether they were or not. So Meyer says, "By regret, I couldn't simply go away, for my wife was not at home, so I had to watch the children." Sannyasi said, "Because of that, I had to call you for longer than an hour. Today I have a surprise for you." Sannyasi said they were there with 3 beam ships and that she had permission to take him on a first trip with them. This was reported in the preliminary investigation report. She had provided an empty seat in her ship and took Meyer aboard. He was able to photograph the other 2 ships as they were starting their departure on this unforgettable occasion. Wow, this sounds great. For greater events, Sannyasi had frequently arrived with additional protective craft which remained screened from sight. For the 3rd of April night demonstration when Meyer was injured, she had 4 protective craft which remained invisible to sight. It was because of this that she was able to safely land and treat Meyer's broken rib. Incidentally, she told him at that time that he had 2 other ribs that had been previously broken, which had not healed straight. Checking back later, he discovered that he may have broken ribs in something else, but having no opportunity to treat them at the time, allowing them to heal by themselves. Why can't she straighten out those crooked ribs? If they can heal them that fast, they could certainly make the bone flexible and then straighten them and then make it solid again. This completely unexpected and mind-blowing change of events turned Meyer around again, and he began to take more serious and even avid interest in these Pleiadian cosmonauts and their objectives. He began to rouse his friends to activity and purge the doubters from the inner group privileges. He began to take the tightened inner group more closely into his confidence, and as they became active helpers, he was allowed to share some inside information with them. Thus was formed the inner core of those who began to surround him. Soon, of these were even singled out by name and given information, and sometimes even objects, to let them know that they were accepted by the extraterrestrials, and also to keep their personal interest up. I think you can be sure that if these people had money, that they would be in the inner circle as long as they were able to contribute. Now I understand why so many people were asked for money to have privy to this information, and they tried to commercialize it because they desperately needed money, and it created a lot of stress within the group. I'd like to know more about these 25 people that lived in this group. Randy Winters talks about them, but he doesn't talk about them individually, and he doesn't talk about their financial situation. The 28th contact was by thought transmission with no face-to-face meeting to be recommunicated for record. The reception process was the same, however, as for that of the contact notes. In this process, however it is done, there is an interaction between the communicator and the receiver, and the transmission can be interrupted as in a conversation, and questions may be asked, with immediate answers provided. The reception is by automatic writing or typing at high speed without pauses or interruptions until the end of the thought being communicated at the time. That communicated received on Friday, the 27th of June, 1975, at 10:47 in the morning, introduced another Pleiadian, a male who Meyer was told he could call Quetzal. This Pleiadian man was described as the supervisor of the Pleiadian Earth Base high in the Alps, near the Italian and French borders. Oh, so that's who Quetzal was. He was the supervisor of a base. It was not far from Mont Blanc. A number of Pleiadian humans, and occasionally intelligent human beings, from other space-traveling races are especially conditioned to live on the surface of our planet here. They operate an array of monitoring equipment. Among other things, Quetzal laid down some rules about the contact notes, which clearly we have been unable to follow. We are therefore in violation of their rules, and are in fact forbidden to publish these contact notes. It is easy to see that we cannot abide by their rules on publication of these notes, as we would be legally vulnerable in a number of ways. We have had to purge the names and certain data to be safe, and thereby are also guilty of publishing these notes out of context, which was also prohibited. We have done so anyway, as we have done at risk of being deprived of all further information. Had we not done this, you would know little of the Pleiadian contacts in Switzerland. But here is what Quetzal said. A further point must be made in respect to the contact notes. As we have seen, you finally trouble yourselves for the finishing of the contact notes for release. Here a factor comes to our attention, which is not our intention, as we have discussed in this respect formerly and very thoroughly. According to the view of some of your members, the reports should be elaborated and spread only partly, leaving all personal concerns, etc., out of the finished version. With that, we cannot agree from our side. Our decision continues, in consequence, that the reports shall be published according to the fixed words, letter by letter, exactly at hand. By that, are as well included all personal affairs, which in consequence, then, are not to be left out. The reports are only worthy and complete when they are revealed word by word and contain all the facts. This is an objective based on very thorough deliberations and logic. All personal and other matters, which are not mentioned in the reports and are not admitted and should not be published as these since the beginning, were spared from the reports. All the present contact reports contain exactly the matters to be offered and explained to Earth humankind. We cannot accept any deletion of any facts, explanations, information, or other parts of the conversations. In this respect, all must be included, even if certain matters are undelightful for some persons. But this not only concerns some of your members, but as well ourselves, because we still make unrecognized mistakes. We expect now a recognition of the mentioned mistakes and their removal. It is not very delightful for us if we have to constantly trouble ourselves in this respect. Once we give an explanation or an order, then it should be enough. It should never happen that matters have to be repeated several times and discussed. In this respect, we also have ordered Sannyasi to omit in the future any kinds of repetitions of a once explained factor. For what has once been explained and discussed needs no further explanations. I disagree with that philosophy. People don't always get it the first time. Sometimes you have to put it in a different form, say it a different way, a different time. Sometimes people are not concentrating, they don't pick it up. Continuing, This is not only time-consuming, but illogical and superfluous. By no means do we try to exercise dictatorial measures or to force our will or our knowledge on any earth beings. We only have undertaken a self-imposed mission to transmit lessons of truth and some other things. Those who want to accept and acknowledge this may do so by their own decision. And one who wants to refuse may also do that. The acknowledging ones must be aware that quite defined principles are necessary to preserve order. Thus, special objectives and orders must be observed, as well as not omitting certain assistance expected of me. The group members around Meyer had sensibly decided to edit and leave out sensitive comments and all direct references to personalities mentioned in the notes before any release outside the group. Ketzel's position is that they, the Pleiadians, have already purged what they think should be left out before the contact notes were transmitted, and that they do not need purging anymore. That's a strange way of thinking. Some of those comments are damaging to certain personalities, and even libelous under our laws, so we have had to take exception to Ketzel's demand, and have edited and deleted as we considered appropriate. The 29th contact took place on Monday, the 7th of May, 1975, at 10:30 in the morning, and this was another of the face-to-face meetings. The first part of the discussion pertained to Carl Wietz's visit. Apparently, he's a German UFO investigator. In an earlier contact, Meyer had asked for and been given the names of several recognized UFO contactees whom the Pleiadians thought were deceivers. During the Veit visit, he mentioned these deceivers in good faith to Carl, trusting the allegations of the ETs. Some of them happened to be contactees whom Herr Veit was quite convinced were legitimately real. As a matter of fact, we do agree with Carl on some of them. Now Meyer has decided to confront the Pleiadians over this matter. Meyer says, "On that I wanted to ask you a question, too. The V's are convinced that some of the names you mentioned as deceivers are not guilty of such deceit. What do you say to that?" Sannyasi, "We have recorded your hours-long discussions, and I am informed about them quite thoroughly. But I also explained before that you would have a very troublesome position. This has come true, as you do know. This troublesome position will continue for you in the future as well. The more we have looked into different places, the more we find certain things against you in progress, and intrigues are being built up against you. From different quarters, you have been for some time watched very thoroughly and very tightly controlled, while already some wicked-minded elements are also plotting intrigues against you. In consequence, be very careful in every respect. Evil tongues are accusing you of espionage for foreign powers, while others are accusing you of deceit, by which they seek to prevent you from spreading the truth. These elements, on the one side, belong to religious circles, and on the other, a still secret organization desiring to suppress what you say. Certain lines in this respect are running to different secret alliances and confederations, as well as to officials in the military, and to certain individuals who feel menaced by what you say. Certain other elements are working against you, because if you are proven right, they could be accused of deceit." Meyer says, "You give me a fantastic outlook, Sannyasi, but actually I have calculated with things like that." Sannyasi says, "You had to, because you do know these things from earlier times."